Hello everybody, you are listening to the 27th episode of the podcast Ukraine Decoded. I'm Viktor Kovalenko from the United States. As a former Ukrainian journalist and veteran, I carry a conversation with experts about Ukraine and the Russian war against this country. My guest today is Sergei Tomilenko from Kyiv. He's the president of the largest Ukrainian association, the Union of Journalists of Ukraine. He joined me to talk about press freedom, relations between media and the government of President Zelensky, and safety, especially during the war. Mr. Tomilenko, it's good to have you on my podcast. My initial question to you is general. How's your organization doing today? Today our union is kind of a hotline for getting help for journalists who suffer from the Russian war. We are trying to provide various forms of help and we support those who continue working. In particular, we supply them with armor vests, helmets, first aid kits, other equipment. Also, we help those editorial teams who have already suffered from occupation, detentions, destruction of their offices. At the moment of the beginning of the full-scale war, our union had 18,000 members and 24 offices across the country. About a third of our members are retired. We call them veterans of the profession. The war changed a lot for local media. As far as I understand, at least a quarter of the media stopped functioning due to the loss of advertising revenue and support from the owners. For sure, the war destroys economic foundations of the media business, but it's difficult for me to present the exact numbers. Our estimates are that from 25% to one-third of the media organizations in Ukraine had been unfortunately closed. Maybe there are mostly economic reasons for that. In the past, many media organizations on the national and local levels were designed for political influence or were the tools of defense for their owners from the authorities. So during the war and the subsequent economic crisis here, many media lost traditional sources of financing as well as their owners who quit their business. Let's talk about relations between media and the government. Does the government of President Zelensky treat media better than previous governments? Recently, you made quite a critical comment regarding the resignation of the Minister of Culture and Information Policy. We as a union were independent from the state before, and we remain to be independent. Therefore, it allows me and my colleagues to express our opinions openly and directly. At the same time, we realize that the current officials are not interested in strengthening journalists and improving their protection. There is no pro-journalism state policy and no understanding among officials that free journalism is important, especially support of us during the war. So we don't see that. What we see is an indifferent attitude towards media, and the state information policy is limited to the attempts to regulate. That's why the newly introduced draft law on the media caused major conflict. We had lots of questions to it. We think that during the war, this should not be a priority for the government to spend energy and time to lobby the new 300 pages law, especially when it's not supported by the journalist community. But at the same time, we don't see openly hostile state policy toward journalists or pressure from the state. But there is lack of attention from the state, misunderstanding of independent media as a part of democracy. In comparison to many Western countries, for example, Norway, where I participated in activities of the local journalism union. First, what officials say in Norway is that they appreciate the role of independent media and that they are part of democracy and success of Norway. The same American officials say, those statements may be just declarative, but anyway, in Ukraine we don't hear that. Ukraine didn't officially establish the war censorship, as the Deputy Minister of Defense Hanna Mahler said. However, as for me, some state censorship is present by not allowing selected TV stations to participate in the joint news marathon that is live on every channel since the war began. What is your opinion about such a united and controlled news flow on all TV and radio channels? Is it time to allow the Ukrainians again to get information from various media? In general, the joint news telemarathon was a good idea and a form of operative reaction at the beginning of the full-scale war, when many panicked and wanted to get information from the government that Ukraine resists and wins. During the first weeks and months, it was a right technological move. On the other side, currently, we see the adaptation to the war. Businesses continue working, people continue working. And the state who launched the telemarathon stopped following the purpose of this news product. In first days, it was a platform for president, prime minister, top officials, but now it became a platform for their advisors and advisors of those advisors. And president presents only his evening daily address. So there is no standard anymore. Of course, the telemarathon neutralizes influences of private media, but foreign diplomats in talks with me encourage to diversify the media landscape. And on the other side, they reveal that the Ukrainian government asks exclusively for financial support of this telemarathon. We think that our government should care about overall media landscape, a news menu for the society, and support all kinds of media organizations, online, print, local television, etc. So asking for help from abroad, the government should seek support for all. Unfortunately, currently the government is focused on the telemarathon, which is convenient for them. We have lots of questions. This news format might not make the government be responsible for its actions. My next question is traditional. I asked the other podcast guests the same. Does Ukraine win the information war against the aggressor Russia? Look, in general, we can say that Ukraine wins the information war. At least in the West, the media organizations tell the same story about the war crimes committed by the Russians as our media tells in Ukraine. It would be worrying if the Ukrainians would share only counter-propaganda and the Western reporters would describe everything differently. Ukraine wins the information war because it provides open access for foreign reporters to the front lines. The team of President Zelensky is from media. He has a media background too. The Ukrainian security services accredited thousands of foreign journalists to visit the front lines, but unfortunately, several scandals erupted around revoking those permits. The most known cases are of reporters from the Danish public broadcaster and the Canadian newspaper. Prime Minister of Canada Trudeau had to ask President Zelensky to solve this issue. Why does this happen? Luckily, those issues are not systematic. We, as a respected internationally recognized journalistic union, immediately offer mediation in such conflicts. We have established contacts with the armed forces and the security service, and we defend real journalists. Yes, we had several conflict situations with revoking the press accreditations of Matilda Kimmer from the Danish public broadcaster and Anton Skiba from the Canadian The Globe and Mail. But I think that this is a good story and a lesson. At the end, their permits were renewed, and it's an important corporate win. It demonstrates that even the Western leaders get involved to defend reporters' rights. Now security personnel is more attentive. On the other hand, during the war, they issued about 14,000 individual press accreditations, but the number of servicemen who verifies media credentials remains the same. We ask the security services to add more people to make this process more efficient and prevent further conflicts. At the end of our talk, I'd like to hear, what would you suggest to those foreign reporters coming to cover Ukraine? What do they not understand, but should? I wish them not to come to Ukraine for an excursion only and for big money. We see the part of reporters who come for sensations and for a few days. There should not be a feeling among our brave defenders that they just help foreign reporters to do their job and that's it. We would like to establish connections, build networking, and possibly expect solidarity with our local journalists. Also, the foreign media representatives can pressure the Ukrainian government to respect local journalists as well. We truly see that officials respect foreigners, but don't treat local reporters with the same respect. At the same time, we had a few situations of individual solidarity. I was amazed that a group who works for the New York Times expressed a desire to donate a part of their salary to families of killed Ukrainian reporters. We as a union recommended several families, and the mother of a TV reporter, Pavlo Li, received their donation. Her son was killed last year by the Russian army in Irpin suburb of Kyiv when he attempted to evacuate civilians. Also, a widow of the TV cameraman Viktor Dedov from Mariupol City received a donation. Her husband was killed in a Russian bombardment. Also, the Canadian newspaper The Globe and Mail showed solidarity and published a big story about how the small newspaper in Izum City renews printing after the city survived occupation. On this optimistic note, I'm ending my talk to Serhiy Tomilenko, a president of the largest union of journalists in Ukraine. We talked about the media that cover the ongoing Russian war against Ukraine. It was the 27th episode of the audio podcast Ukraine Decoded. I'm its author and producer, Viktor Kovalenko. Goodbye and so long.